Now, that was two types of training. We come across various methods of training and development. This is the next topic I'm taking in this. There are two types of the training can be done either on the job or it can be done off the job. On the job means while you're working, you're asked to do certain things which you do not know, but you are asked to do that thing there and then. So while you're doing it, you learn. You learn and you work. You work and learn. Right? For example, a new module has come. Let's say, I'll give you an example. You are having Windows 2000 in your computer and XP is installed now. So this training is done on the job. So you start learning XP features by trial and error. Some instructor will come and sit with you. You know, it's in a very short period of time, you'll learn the features in no time. That is on the job, right? So what is the beauty about on the job? It is inexpensive. Doesn't cost much of money and resources. It's quite cheap. It does not require elaborate preparations. I don't have to go to a training hall, prepare the lights and this and that, sound systems, LCDs and all. No need for that. Okay? Provides a concurrent feedback. Concurrent feedback means what? While I am training this boy who's sitting next to me on the XP, he tells me, sir, I've understood this. Sir, can you correct me? So concurrent. Concurrent means while the session is going on, I get feedback. And quickly I can make the corrections and give him more inputs. Right? No or low disruption of work due to absence. See, in a regular training program, off the job, he has to leave his workplace. So there's an interruption. And when he comes back, there's an overload of work. Work is waiting for him for the days he was absent. In this case, zero disruption. He's doing his job. As he's doing his job, he's producing his daily results. At the same time, he's learning with a little extra time. So no disruption or low disruption. Participation, motivation, and involvement is easy to calibrate. When I'm training this boy, I come to know, is he learning or not learning? If he loses interest, then as a good trainer, I've got to find different ways of motivating him. So it is under control. And job instructions, there are certain examples of this given in the following slides. Job instruction is a type of an on-the-job training. Internship is another, which is another type of an on-the-job training. Apprenticeship, coaching, and job rotation are examples of on-the-job training. Okay, friends. So now we go to the first one, job instruction. Very easy and simple to understand. Job instruction training is a step-by-step, relatively simple technique used to train employees on the job. It is suitable to impart manual skills and procedures. My friend who is operating the camera now behind me, who's helping me to helping this module to happen. Now, he may have an assistant. This assistant may want to learn about how to operate the camera. So he will simply put the person into job instruction. He'll ask him to come and stand next to him. In fact, he has an assistant right now. This assistant will watch him, how he is operating the camera, how the lights are being aligned, how the camera is moving towards me, sometimes towards the slide. So all these things he'll teach him. So this boy will keep observing him and then gradually he'll learn the skills. So this is called as job instruction, on the job training. It is step-by-step approach, simple technique, and it is usually suitable for imparting manual skills and procedures. Training is imparted either by the supervisor or the co-worker, and training demonstrates how a job is performed and the trainee repeats this. So he'll use the camera once on me, then he'll call him and you try it out, he'll say. So if he's confident, he may give it. If he's not confident, he'll again tutor him. Okay? Gaps found are immediately corrected until the trainee can perform on his own. Next comes internship. It's with all freshers who join organizations. We go through internship. It is suitable for students who are fresh graduates and in need of an experience. Internships are ideal for understanding the way a particular industry functions and what it would be like to work in that industry. An intern goes into the company and he is going through the induction and orientation. A fresher or a new entrant. So there, what is it on? He is given the larger picture about his job, about the company, and about fitting into the culture. Many companies go on and hire successful interns on a full-time job. Most internships are unpaid, though few firms offer a stipend. We have the summer training in our B schools. So the summer training is about, it comes between the semester to semester, in between. Now the companies come and hire them, they don't pay them, but they give them valuable skills which are required for them for the future job when they take after the PG is over or after the master's is over, right? Next comes apprenticeship. Now, this is apprenticeship term is used when you're talking about trade. What is the trade? You know, we are a manufacturing unit, for example, has got welding, it has got lathe, it's got drilling machines. Okay. Now, these are trades. A computer operator, for example, that's a trade. Now, these trades are taught in some scenarios in a structured manner, classroom lectures with exams, etc. Okay. And they are taught more practical, little bit of theory. At the same time, the beauty about this thing is that they are not only taught, instead of they paying fees, they are given some amount of money, which is called as a stipend. So it's a combination of classroom instructions and on-the-job training. In this training program, apprentice earns wages while he learns a skilled profession in a specific field. Employer helps the apprentices learn their trade in return for their continuing to work for him for a certain period after they become skilled. The apprentice may or may not be absorbed by the organization. You know, there's a graduate apprentice training that happens in many companies for engineers. Now, the graduate apprentice, that particular legal aspect of it, which is given by the education board, at one point of time, they did not make it compulsory that people have to get absorbed. Okay? So, the apprentices may get absorbed or they may not get absorbed. But if the apprentice is so skilled, the company may say, okay, we'll offer the position, please join us. Next, we talk about coaching. Coaching is a very large term today, but in this context of what I'm explaining right now, it's got two important points. Coaching is a practice of giving sufficient direction, instruction, and training to a person or a group so as to achieve goals or to develop specific skills. Coaching has got a number of things to do. It's got behavioral aspects. It's got certain aspects to do with the human psychology. It's about goals and targets. It's about the vision. It's about mobilizing a group of people into an action towards their goal. It's about squeezing out the best in them. It's about telling them to challenge their limitations. It's about a lot many things wherein the coach and the coached, they form a single unit of working. And coaching is a most modern, the most state-of-art type of, you know, training and development wherein the person goes through an overall wash. He goes through a complete wash. Now, what is coaching? Coaching is a practice of giving sufficient direction, instructions, and training to a person or a group so as to achieve goals or develop specific skills. The coach should know about the trainee's aims or the goal, skills, drawbacks, training, environment, need, etc. to decide the coaching method. The coach is not going to teach anything new. The person who's coming for coaching to him, the coached, has to know what he wants. He has to define it. Many times, the coach does not know what he or she wants. So, the coach could go along and bringing it out by asking him questions. What do you want to do in your life? Where do you want to go? Okay, why do you want to do computer engineering? So, thereby, he is facilitating him to bring out what his dream, his passion, his vision, etc. So, what does he do? From a clouded thinking, he brings him to clarity. Then, making him choose, making him go through decision making, what he wants to do in life. And then, he has to go for problem solving. So many things. So, we have this people who are very popular, they are called as life coaches. They coach you for lots of things throughout the life and they coach you for managing your life also. You know, so this is very important. And finally, coaching methods include both theoretical and practical processes. It's more of practical and more of experiential. Theoretical sometimes we use, but not always. On the job training, very popular one is job rotation. It involves moving trainees from department to department at certain intervals to learn different functions of the organization. It is useful for management trainees as they are able to understand the basics of the business from different angles. There are two terms. One is job rotation, the other one is career shift. Now, a job rotation could be in the same generic working. Within the finance department, if I'm moving from accounts to tax, tax to audit, then it could be called as a job rotation. That is developing overall skills for the person to rise to become the finance manager or the CFO. Career shift is when I leave my finance and I go totally to a new field like marketing and I remain there. If I remain there, it is no more a job rotation. So if I go there for a short period to learn certain marketing skills and inputs and come back to finance, then it's a job rotation. Now many people, what they do is they post an employee into a different department and that person is there for 2 years. Now that cannot be a job rotation unless there's a plan to bring him back to the original department. Okay? Now we talk about off the job training. Okay? Off the job training happens away from the workplace. This is necessary to get the people away from the distractions of the workplace. When I'm teaching XP to somebody on the table, it's perfectly okay. There'll be less distractions. And that XP, that skills are very, very easy to catch. He already knows about Windows 2000. So to put XP becomes very easy. Whereas if I have to teach him behavioral skills, I have to teach him team building, and I have to give him some inputs, I have to make him do some exercises, I cannot do it in the organization. I cannot do it in the on the job when he's sitting there. I have to take him off the job, maybe within the company in a training room, or I may have to take him outside the company elsewhere. That is what is meant by off the job training. So, off the job training enables the trainees to absorb new and innovative ideas in a relaxed environment. All of us will agree that we learn better. We come out of our habitual thought process only when we are in a different environment. See, one of the reasons why we go for a vacation is, when we go to a vacation, we find that our dad or mom, who were behaving in a certain way there at home, they behave differently there. Is it not a fact? We ourselves would treat our children differently. We look at children different when we go for vacation. Of course, one word of caution. If you are going for a break, for a vacation, and if you carry your mobiles, your Blackberries and all that, and you keep doing work there, you will exhibit the same behavior. And that happens even in training programs off the job. Some senior managers, they come with their mobiles and Blackberries and all that, and they start doing their work during the break times. Then what happens is that distraction still remains. So when you're taking people off job, I normally take people off job to a place where there is no connectivity at all. So that they are focusing only on the issue what we have come there for. Because that distraction dilutes the learning. Because this is experiential, behavioral, emotional, every learning that happens off the job. And he's in a relaxed environment and he learns new ways of looking at life, new behaviors. The only challenge could be that the training provided may not be relevant to the actual events happening at the workplace. Now many people take, many trainers, they take people out for a training off the job. They give them a lot of excitement, do this, do that and all that. But very few trainers connect it. If I have to do an exercise, say let's say rappelling or rock climbing or river crossing, for a certain group of employees from a company, then I've got to tell them the relevance of this. How does it apply to your workplace, to your function, to your department, and what sort of learning you can take it further? Now that much amount of connectivity the trainer should have. When they do not have, what happens is, you do something there in that river and you come back here, you are able to gather no relevance. Sometimes the trainee himself catches it and he interprets it in his debriefing. But many a time, the trainer has to ensure that he has caught it by asking him questions and by ensuring that he is going to take it back and put it into practice. So when he sits at that workplace, he must remember that that river crossing, that same skills is here and this is how we interpret it. Okay? Let us look at different techniques used in the off-the-job training. So let's go to the next slide. First is the regular, simple format with which originally training started. When training became training, long, long back, everybody felt that give a lecture and people will understand, they will transform. If lectures could transform, this lecture will transform all of you who are listening to me. But I'm sure it doesn't. Right? So, lectures are verbal presentations of information by a knowledgeable instructor to an audience. Okay? Lectures can be arranged in large groups and hence cost per trainee is low. I know many people who say they are going for a lecture to learn things. That's what they learn. After the lecture, when they come back, ask them questions. What have we learned? The speaker was good. He was very eloquent. He used good vocabulary. He cracked a lot of jokes. It was such a fun-filled evening, training program. I said, what changes has it made in you? It made me feel good. Has it made any changes when you came back here? No. It was a pleasurable lecture, a good inspiring lecture, period. No behavioral changes happen as a consequence of lecture unless the trainee or the person who is sitting in the audience catches something, identifies with his life and has the passion to put it into practice. That can be 1 in 100, 1 in 500 perhaps. Okay? But regardless of that, there is a position of lectures as a part of the training. Lectures cannot be ignored. They are a part of it. Right? It's a one-way communication and no feedback is sought usually. But these days, when we are delivering lectures, we ask for interactivity. See, when you people come for their personal contact program in the classrooms, many of us ask you questions. We don't just give the lecture. We ask you questions. We interact. So, in and through the interaction, some of you learn some things. Some of you transform. Audio visuals, very common medium which we are using for so many years. We have the PPTs, we have the clippings. Right now you are watching an audio visual only. Audio is mine. Audio visuals include slides, videos, films. It is used to provide realistic examples of job conditions. Audio visuals need to be backed up with interactions and feedback for the true learning. There are some people who just show an audio, a video, and they go away. And they expect that people have to learn. After you show a video, you need to have a debriefing. Like for example, in Wellinger, you know, we have the video learning sessions. So the video learning sessions are held on one Saturday in the month. And that evening, one feature film is shown. And after that, we have this, you know, we have a debriefing. So we ask the students, I ask the students, what have you learned from this movie? What is the management application? What's the take home? How will you make a breakthrough by looking at these characters here? So those learning starts relating. Computer assisted instruction. This has come in after the computers came in. In a computer assisted instruction, there is no trainer and the information is provided to trainee in parts on a computer. You know, do it yourself learning. There's a particular type of training program available online and they tell you week one will give you these things. So on the week one, you go there, tuck, 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 you start doing the thing. And you have to appear for a small test like the MCQ. And when you appear for the test, it will tell you pass or fail. If you fail, you have to go back again and do it. Completely computer instructions, no human being, no trainer, no physical presence of any trainer. After completion of the part, trainee has to answer questions based on the part. Correct answers to the questions are provided. If the trainee's answers are not correct, she moves to the correct, they move to the next part. If she has to repeat the same part. If not, she has to repeat the same part. Trainee can learn at her own speed and costs are high as contents have to be developed. As you know, we have to develop content. So, costs go up. Now, this lecture is going on. This is involving a lot of, you know, applications of computers and, you know, linking and other things and all. So, it involves costs. So, any package that comes online or, you know, you have to buy it as a CD from outside, that's going to cost money. So, there are certain what is called as a creation cost. Okay. A cost of producing, production cost. Right. Now, this is very interesting. Simulation, on-the-job training. Some of you must have heard about flight simulator, flight. Pilots, after the training is over for pilots, they have to learn, we have to know whether they can really fly a plane. Imagine taking off a passenger flight, more than about 200 or 300 passengers, and he's a new pilot. And if the passengers come to know he's a new guy, they will all get scared. Now, I want to ensure whether the pilot has learned his job properly. So they put him into a flight simulator. So inside in the cockpit, it's like a virtual reality game which some of you must have played. You sit in the cockpit and inside the cockpit, it's in a place called a wind tunnel and there's a flow of wind. You'll feel as if you're flying up in the air 30,000 feet. And all the controls, everything is there. And you'll go through the experience of a pilot who's manning a flight. Okay? Now, that is a flight simulator which came to my mind while I'm talking to you. So I spoke about it, right? Now what do we do in a simulation? It is a technique that duplicates as nearly as possible the actual conditions encountered on the job. Simulation is an attempt to create a realistic decision-making environment for the trainee. I give you this example already. Simulations provide likely problem situations and decision alternatives to the trainee. In the army, we have the training, you know, where the army people are taken, they take the rifle, and they have a bayonet, a small knife, and they go and charge and plunge it into their sandbags. Simulation. Okay? The result of the trainee's decisions on the workplace are reported back to him so that he learns from the feedback and improves his subsequent simulation. It's like an on-the-job training of skills. In fact, simulation is resorted to when the actual working conditions are very risky and they have to create those same working conditions in the training scenario. Like this flight I talked about. Okay, so those scenarios where I cannot take any chances, then I have to create a simulator. In the simulator, the person sits and he actually goes through the same experience which he would go through in the real situation. Simulation. One of the ways of simulation is case study. Case studies are very common. Just a few months back in Wellinger, we had a case study presentations for the DLP students. It was a grand success. Okay, what do? We tell them it's a written description of an actual situation in a business. So we invited students to come out with actual situation of a business. So from the respective companies, they came out with themes and they made a paper. They made PPTs. Trainee studies the matter to assess the real situation and problem faced, and the trainee has to provide a solution to rectify the situation or solve the problem in his own way. Okay. Case study is conducted in a group environment as the solution is arrived at only after discussions among participants, and it is an ideal method to increase decision making abilities. So we have a group of people who are in the audience. There are case presenters who come one by one, they present the case, and as they present the case, there are question answers coming up. There are certain suggestions coming up. Brainstorming takes place. Case presenter learns certain other types of solutions which he needs to also provide besides what he has already given in the case. The people out there also get an idea about this industry has got these complexities. So we had almost 16 people who had come in and presented 16 different cases here. And it was very remarkable to see that we had people from every industry who had come in. And through that, there was a lot of learning that went through whole day. Okay. Now we talk about role playing. This is very easy. This is something which most of you must have gone through. Act as if. This is called as act as if method. I'm the boss. You're the subordinate. Now I want the both of us are sitting in two different chairs. Boss's chair and subordinate's chair. So we have a dialogue. Some scene is created and we have to enact the scene. Then I shift roles with him. So he knows what it feels sitting in the boss's seat as much as I know. I should know what it feels to be sitting in the subordinate seat. Role is like we are putting on an act, right? Role playing focuses on human relations issues. A realistic situation is created and the trainees assume parts of specific personalities in the situation. A boss, a subordinate, a secretary, a workman, a senior is given. A small script is given to them. Okay, this is a scenario and you guys have to do this. So on that basis they work. Role playing results in better understanding among individuals. This in turn leads to better interpersonal relationships. Those of you who have played roles, who have acted in some drama or some sort of skits, I'm sure you'll appreciate the fact that when you're into the role, you start seeing certain things about the role which you would have otherwise not seen or felt. Right? Changes in attitudes is another result of role playing. Role playings have been seen to be very powerful change agents in people's perception about their own attitudes and behaviors. Okay. Then we talk about vestibule training in simulation. In this training, this training takes place away from the work environment and it utilizes equipment which closely resembles the actual ones used on the job. Let's say that we have to do a training for the same thing I talked about, you know, fighter pilot training. So there is a vestibule. Vestibule means a chamber. So in the chamber, the person is sitting. There is a cockpit. Everything about the cockpit is there. All the control panels, etc. He sits there. And the actual, whatever he is doing in the actual job, those equipment, identical equipment is kept in that place. The trainee is permitted to learn under simulated conditions without disrupting ongoing operations. And vestibule training is advantageous as it helps the trainee to concentrate on learning rather than being distracted by the work. He is there on the job and he learns it. Okay. Now we talk about sensitivity training. This has come very recently, hardly about 20-25 years back. It was a psychological tool used by some psychologists in the past, but as a tool in HR training, it's come very recently, hardly about 25, maybe 30 years back, I think, right? Sensitivity training focuses on gaining insight into one's own and others' behavior. It's about asking you to look within, you know, the psychological aspects of your behavior and the way you're relating to others. Are you sensitive to somebody's behavior? Are you responding to somebody's little bit of sign language or body movement or eye movement? Are you sensitive to that or not? Or are you totally like a rock? Okay. The objectives of this training are to provide the participants with increased self-awareness of their behavior, increase in their sensitivity to behavior of others, and increase understanding of the group dynamics. Group dynamics involving team play. People coming together and playing together like a team. So different types of behaviors emerge. The results of the training are increase in one's empathy to others. Empathy means I'm putting myself in the shoes of the other. So when I'm going through sensitivity training, I start realizing, oh my God, I don't know how I misunderstood him. How did I did not empathize with him? How did I not, you know, see this part of his, what he was saying? Okay. Listening skills. It improves listening skills like in a very large proportion, and in conflict resolution skills as well. Okay. Then we have behavioral modeling. It's about observing somebody else's behavior and just learn to be like them. Somebody is coming every day on time at seven in the morning for the shift, and he's so diligent that after he comes, he just changes. He goes to the shop floor. He works on the machine, and he goes for the break only at the exact time. A disciplined life. Now you want to become like him, so you observe him and do the things which he does. I'm a trainer in an area called neuro-linguistic programming in NLP. So we talk about modeling behavior. We say that if I want to become like an expert, I must see the behavior of the expert on a day-to-day basis. The expert does certain things which others don't see. It is not the significant things, it is the small things that matter. Those small things we need to capture by observation and by putting it into our life. This behavior of that person, I'll be able to imbibe. It is not copycatting. It's not about doing copycat. It's about understanding that part of the person. Why does he get up at 4 a.m. every day? What exactly does he do at 4 a.m.? And then you see what he's doing at 4 a.m. and try to understand by doing that, what does he get? That second part is very important. By getting up at 4 a.m., what does he achieve? So once I get that thing, then it goes into my system much better, that behavior. I must have a meaningfulness in changing my behavior. That meaningfulness is done through the behavioral modeling process in this case. It is basically learning through observation. Employees learn all kinds of behavior by observing supervisors, co-workers, managers, etc. Anybody for that matter. Then come seminars and conferences, which we are all familiar. Such programs facilitate meeting together of groups of people to seek mutual development. They are also used to communicate new developments and trends in finance, management technology. Seminars and conferences for me are basically card exchanging areas. There are people who are talking, very few people listen to those beautiful things which people say. And people come there and they just exchange cards 3-4 days. They have lunch, they have some party shati, and then they go back as what they are. That shouldn't be the case. For me, when I go for a conference or a seminar, I've got to be very clear who are the speakers, what value I'm going to add. I make it a point to sit there if I have the patience, if I have the time. If I don't have the time, I don't enroll for any seminar or conference, because it's an injustice. Every seminar and conference is carefully thought out. If you go there without a value addition and you go there just for social purposes, just for mixing and taking cards, that's okay, we need to do that. But that should not be the main agenda. But many corporate people do this. Some of you listening to me, I used to do it once upon a time. So just rethink into that. Evaluation of a training program, we are further continuing. Organizations are investing huge amounts of time, effort and resources to provide training to their employees. Today they are doing it. It's but natural that management would want to ensure that the training imparted is of high quality and that the training process is efficiently managed. Definitely. Ye dil mange more. Today they are demanding a lot from trainers like us. And every trainer has to stretch himself. He has to keep on evolving. If I don't evolve, I move out. I'm not wanted anymore. So that evolution, I have to keep on learning. I have to run on a conveyor belt which is running backwards. I have to run forward in a conveyor belt which is running backwards. It's very important. Okay. Hence, evaluation of training is as much important as training itself. In almost all organizations, feedback forms are distributed among participants after the training, and the quality of the feedback improves if questionnaires are unambiguous and precise and incisive. The questionnaires have to be properly structured. They should ask questions in such a way that they get the answer which they are expecting, the direction. Not the answer, but the direction. If you ask a very ambiguous, vague question, how was the training program? People are going to give subjective answers. Instead, you ask a question, did the training program fulfill the requirement of conflict management for which you were attending? And give them the points. Then they'll write down. You're giving them a focus. Okay? We need to direct their thinking towards that action. It's very important. Evaluation needs to focus on the extent to which the training needs were fulfilled, extent to which the individual's expectations were attained, specific information obtained, and areas where training would be implemented. This is all repetition, I've already explained this. Function of evaluation be distinct from training and development, and its mechanism should have own set of people. I mentioned this earlier. Evaluation should be done by someone else totally, and training different person, so that two, there's an objective view towards the training, whether it's really gone off well or not. Okay? The role of the trainer is also central to the evaluation of the training. So he becomes the central, meaning that it is he who has done these things. So good, bad or ugly, he's a person who is a change agent. Now when he is in the center, all the evaluation that comes to him, he has to learn to absorb it, look at it objectively, ask questions and start modifying his way of training for the subsequent sessions or the modules that he takes. There are barriers to an effective training program. That's what we are covering now in this section. Barriers are basically roadblocks. Training is given a bad name. Training goes for a toss because of certain barriers. Some of the barriers are listed here. There are many more. Lack of commitment from management. This is a very common barrier which we face in many companies. Management has to set aside a part of its budget for training. Training must not be limited to managers but also to cover the entire workforce. Inadequate spending on training. Training may they have a very stringent budget. They keep it as a last thing. It is considered as a cost by many companies. So if the financial constraint is there, then the training will not serve its purpose. Then what happens is, since the training budget is low, you ask for a trainer with a lower fees. So good trainers will not come, and the persons with lower fees will actually screw up the whole process, thereby giving a bad name. I am not saying that all trainers who charge low fees are bad. What I am saying is, when cost becomes your controlling factor, then the quality goes for a toss. Poaching of trained workers. Now the company trains you. Many companies do not send their employees for training because they feel that after I train, my competitor will take this fellow away. That is called as poaching. So a trained employee is more in demand in other companies, and especially in industries like IT, and are bound to poach them. Trainees are asked to sign a bond. So to ensure that the person doesn't get robbed by my competitor, I tell him to sign a bond. But again, I have my own views on this. Signing a bond may not make the employee get committed to his work. He will go through the ordeal, what he thinks is an ordeal, without understanding the larger picture, and he may give what is worst, maybe not the best. Anything wherein you're trying to put a human being into a control, he will try to resist. So we must have different ways of ensuring that he stays back. In fact, it's very funny to notice that people come and tell me, sir, they're asking me to sign a bond, so I'm leaving the company. I said, when they're asking to sign a bond, there must be a reason. The reason must be they are sending you for a training abroad, which costs money. They are giving you superior skills. Now, when all this is being given by the company, what's the harm in signing a bond? Because it is going to, they're investing in you. So you have to give them a return. But no, people are very funny. They say, no, I don't want to go for a bond. And what is the most hilarious part of life is, they may not sign a 2-year bond, but they'll stay in the company till retirement. Now, this is human attitude. Please make a note of it. Those of you who are insisting people on signing bond, you have to rethink into signing bonds and give a different angle. Those of you who are not willing to sign bond, look at it from this angle. On a very light note, when you sign a bond for 2 years, guaranteed employment for 2 years. I tell this to some of the students who are, you know, very frivolous. Okay. Now we come to related learning. We are coming to the end of the slide. And here we talk about let us learn. Now, the new forms of training that has started now in the recent years, e-learning, learning through the net. All of you go through virtual class. I think most of you go through the virtual class. What is that e-learning? That's a form of a training. Students come and give me feedback saying that, sir, I really learned a lot of things sitting at my home. I learned some skills which I'm putting into action. I was quite surprised. Okay? E-learning, virtual classrooms, experiential learning have replaced traditional learning in the form of lectures, books, PowerPoint, presentation, etc. Now people are going for action-based learning using the electronic medium, going outbound into the hills. All forms of non-classroom based trainings are tailor-made to suit specific needs of specific groups. The beauty about this type of training is that there is no one glove that fits all. You can evolve for groups. You can keep on evolving and do newer and newer things. A lot of creativity you need in this. It's very exciting. They save on time, foster higher interactivity and teamwork, enhance team spirit, increase employee motivation and propagate instant learning. Lessons in communication, leadership, teamwork, planning and delegation and conflict resolution are taught not in the classrooms but in open tents through activities like rappelling, rock climbing, raft making, river crossing. All of you have done it when you went for the ELM, experiential learning, right? There's no hierarchical structure involved in the trainings. That is, it doesn't say that X has to take it down, Y to Y, Y to Z. No. Just about anybody is put into the training and anybody can learn these skills. When employees learn as they have fun, their ability to retain the learning is far higher. I'm always of the belief that, you know, learning has to happen in a very free space. Restricted learning restricts the performance to the point the restriction is kept. After that, the person doesn't perform at all. If you allow freedom, people learn. And then it is up to us to take the best and leave the rest. Training and development. Now we come to the summary slide, friends. Training and development refers to the imparting of specific skills, abilities and knowledge to an employee. An organization follows the process of training and development which involves these 4-5 points which I've already explained. Assessment of training needs, deriving objectives of the training, designing the training program, implementing the training and finally, the evaluation of the training program itself. There are methods by which training can be conducted. These can be categorized into on-the-job and off-the-job training methods. Job instruction, internship, apprenticeship, coaching and job rotation are some examples of the on-the-job training. And lectures, audio-visual sensitivity training, management games and computer-assisted instructions are some examples of off-the-job training. Right? Improved profitability and job knowledge and skills at all levels of the organization are some of the benefits of training, as we all know. Evaluation of a training program is as important as training itself. It ensures that the training provided contributes to the growth of the organization. But there are certain factors like lack of commitment from the management and poaching of trained workers which act as barriers or roadblocks to effective training program. With this, my dear friends, thank you very much and have a lovely time learning HR.